That's an FCIC interview with Tom Russo, former chief legal officer at Lehman Brothers. Today is August 20th, 2010, 2 p.m. From the FCIC of Chris Seifer, Troy Burris, Joby Danganon, and I'm Sarah Knauss.
It is August 20th, 2010, and we are interviewing Mr. Tom Russo, formerly of Lehman Brothers chief legal officer. Mr. Russo, we are with the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission established by a statute last year called the Fraud Enforcement and Recovery Act of 2009 that tasks us with determining the various causes of the financial crisis and preparing a report, delivering it to Congress and the President by December 15th of this year. That statute tells us to look at various things, including any institution that failed or would have failed but for the receipt of government assistance. It also tells us to look at the issue of too big to fail or systemically important institutions. Those are at least two of the reasons why we are looking at Lehman Brothers and why we have asked to talk to you. And as I said, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. Before we get to the substance of the interview, could you please summarize your educational and work background from college for us?
Well, I graduated from college in 65, went to law school, went to Cornell, got an MBA and a law degree, got both in 69, worked at the SEC for a couple of years, went to Cadwalader with Shim and Taft, a New York-based law firm, until 75, 77, worked at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and Division of Trading and Markets. Came back to Cadwalader in 77 and up to, I think it was 92, or at the end of 90, it might have been 93, went to Lehman Brothers as chief legal officer. And then after the bankruptcy, stayed there briefly, then went to Patton Boggs, and did that briefly, and then in February of this year went to AIG as the general counsel.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so I want to probably focus most of our time today in terms of Lehman Brothers in the 2007-2008 time frame. So in that time frame, can you, one, just generally explain what your job responsibilities were and who you reported to and who your direct reports were.
All right. In that time frame, I have to put in context, prior
sure.
to that, as chief legal officer, I had the legal department and regulatory compliance and government relations reporting to me somewhere, and I think it was in middle of 07, but somewhere in there. That changed. I kept my title as chief legal officer, but the legal department and everything under it reported to somebody else. And I, my role became a little bit more of an advisor, if you will, as opposed to a day-to-day manager of the legal department, and that's where it remained until the end.
Okay, and were you an advisor to, I mean, a particular executive officer or the entire management team or what?
I think, my view of it all was I was very close to retirement, and this was sort of an evolution out of it, and I think it's fair to say I was an advisor to a lot of different people, to the senior managers, to the legal department. I worked with the person who was responsible for the legal department. I worked with a lot of the lawyers in the legal department, but more as a resource, an advisor, someone with hopefully a decent amount of experience,
mm-hmm.
but not running it or managing it as I had done before.
Sure. Okay, so we know that after, from reviewing documents and conducting other interviews, that after J.P. Morgan Chase's government-assisted acquisition of Bear Stearns in March 2008, that the SEC and the Federal Reserve Bank in New York increased their presence at Lehman and was focusing on liquidity and those types of issues. Were you having, did you have any involvement with that increased oversight at all?
Well, I take it in two parts. With the Fed, I obviously knew they were there, but I, to the best of my recollection, I never remember talking to the people at the Fed who were there. With respect to the SEC, I actually knew the people, in fact, one of them from Mike McAroley, who worked with me when I was at the SEC a long time ago, and so I had some interaction with them. But Mike would see me at various times as more of a traffic cop. Who should I go to for this, or who should I go to for that, mm-hmm. that type of thing.
Okay. Did you have any involvement, or let me strike that, not involvement, but knowledge of how Lehman's funding counterparties were willing to continue to fund, pulling back, changing terms? Do you have any knowledge of that?
No. One of my problems is one of my knowledge bases is Andrew Sorkin's book is on that. So I find it's as you got into September, and particularly after the earnings call, then everyone was becoming knowledgeable that there were issues. But prior to that, I'd not been involved in the, let me put it in context. When Bart McDade became president, he basically got his group, and I don't want to say I was excluded because Bart and I get along fabulously, but I was not really part of the group that was dealing with any of these issues at all. I probably didn't go to any, that I recall, nothing on a day-to-day basis. So I don't have any firsthand real knowledge of that. And I never dealt with any of the counterparties up until the very last couple of days. That was minimal.
Okay. Let's approach it this way. Can you generally describe what you were, doing at Lehman from, Bear Stearns through the bankruptcy, and then I'll follow up.
Okay, good. Well, there were an awful lot of things aside from the major issues that you're interested in, and I was involved. We have a number of major litigations. I got involved with all the major litigations. I got involved with a lot of, you might call it mundane, but the bigger day-to-day stuff in dealing with the various members of the legal department. I was part of a number of the meetings that Dick went to with the Fed. I went there with the chief financial officer, the head of risk, and I would go there, I think, in my capacity really as government relations and the fact that I, at that time was on the advisory committee of the Fed. So I would do that. I was involved with the initial Korean negotiation. They sent me over there to sort of lead it. I was, those are kind of a lot of what I was doing.
Okay. Let's start off with the meeting that Mr. Fuld had with the Fed. Can you walk me through those chronologically as best you can?
Yeah, chronologically I would have a hard time with, but I remember the context and basically what was said.
Okay.
The meetings were held at the New York Fed. Present at the meetings were, I think in all cases, the CFO, and the meetings I recall, Aaron was at certainly one. I just don't remember when Aaron left or didn't leave. But then after that, it clearly Ian Lowett was there. Chris O'Mara was there. Myself and Dick. On the other side, Tim Geithner would run those meetings, and he had with him a number of people from the Fed, I believe, but I can't swear to this. They were they included the people who were actually at Lehman Brothers, but I'm not, I can't swear to this because I really didn't know those people, but that was kind of his group who seemed to be the people very, very knowledgeable of Lehman. And the meetings typically lasted anywhere from an hour and 15 minutes or thereabouts. Tim would ask a great many questions. For the most part, the CFOs were the ones answering those questions. Dick might, you know, add things here or there, but it was mainly the CFOs because they were pretty much in their areas. I don't even think I spoke it. I might have spoken, but I don't think I spoke. I must have said something, but it was not in my area, so it would have been something. But I had very little role there. But it was very interactive. Typically, there would be a presentation that would be given to the Fed, and Tim would have his own database from his own people.
So when are these meetings? What time frame are we talking about?
You know, I they are the kind of they are when they are. I always hate to speculate on something which has a real answer to it. But if I were to guess, May, June, July, August, somewhere in there. They were certainly at the, you know, up until the end, but when they began is where I'm having the difficult time. If does anyone know when Aaron was, when she stopped being CFO?
Well, June 12th was when the company announced, you know, Gregory leaving and Callan leaving, and that's when McDade took over for Gregory and,
yeah,
and Lewitt replaced Aaron Callan.
Yeah, well, definitely Aaron was at one, so it was before June 12th.
Okay.
She was at one. Now, whether she was at two, I really don't recall her being at two. So if we assume it was on one, it probably started in May. But there's, you know, there is an answer to it, but that's my guess. But the ones I remember are mainly that, and frankly, the only reason I remember Aaron is that I know she was late to that particular meeting, and which was surprising.
Were these, you know, regular, periodic, pre-scheduled meetings, or was it, hey, New York Fed has a concern, come on down?
No, it's my understanding that they were. Now I'm guessing because there's an answer again. That something like every month or 5 weeks, something in there. And it's my understanding, in fact, this I'm sure, that they had these meetings with other similarly situated. So what I thought was happening was the Fed, the New York Fed, had people at different places and was trying to sit down with the CFOs and the heads of the companies to sort of discuss where they are, where they're going, what their plans are, etc. And they were scheduled meetings. It wasn't certainly just Lehman.
So can you, I mean, understanding that you can't do it chronologically, but can you tell us what the issues were and what the discussions were in terms of where Lehman was, where it's going, etc.?
Yeah, well, basically, they went through explaining where we were liquidity-wise, where we were, whatever the financial issues were. I really don't remember exactly, but they were all centered around, you know, what were counterparties doing, what were their plans for the future, what are their contingency plans, those type things that were were discussed. And my recollection is that most of the meeting was Tim asking questions of Aaron and subsequently Ian.
So, understanding they were asking about, I mean, we've certainly seen from the documents that when you get into that week before the bankruptcy, there were certainly some counterparty issues in terms of funding or clearing banks or things like that. Generally, do you have knowledge of whether there were at least, you know, serious funding issues prior to the week before the bankruptcy?
You know, again, realizing that I wasn't part of the inner group dealing with this at all, I don't remember, but you would hear things in the halls, etc. I don't really, to me, there was a night and day difference the last couple of days before that famous weekend and prior to it. I mean, almost something you could feel in your stomach. And so I didn't get I didn't feel a worry, but maybe because I was a little far from it. But I didn't sense it. But the right people, of course, they asked that, the people who were involved in it. But I just didn't have that feeling that it was, I knew there was a bad situation. I knew the economy was having difficulty. I knew all those things, certainly. But I didn't feel that Lehman was any worse off than, you know, any other firm. Just didn't get that sense.
Generally, what were Mr. Geithner's and the other folks at the New York Fed's main concerns, and how did they change over time? Or were they always the same?
My recollection was that there wasn't much of a change, in that they were asking, you know, very logical questions, people were generally nervous about the markets. People were very nervous about the shorts. People were nervous about everything, and the questions were all regarding all the financial metrics of the company. I didn't sense if you would have taken, I don't know how many meetings there were, but let's say there were four for the sake of argument, because I really don't remember. In my recollection, I don't remember it being any more dramatic in the fourth meeting, say, than the first meeting. I thought that it was give and take, and I thought Tim did make, you know, statements that he's got his own people and his own data. But I didn't get a sense of leaving the meeting feeling, oh shit, there's a problem, or any more sense. But I thought they were just doing their due diligence to make sure that everybody they were worried about is making motion, and they knew what was happening.
Did the issue of Lehman, you know, failing ever come up in any of these meetings?
Not to my recollection.
Okay. Do you ever recall if there were any discussions about the government ever providing any type of assistance to Lehman?
Not during those meetings, no. No, one way or the other.
Okay, you said you don't recall discussions about the government providing assistance during those meetings. Does that mean that you recall discussions other than in those meetings?
No, the only time I remember, on a very micro level, there were, you know, requests that we had for a bank holding company. I don't know if you consider that government assistance, 23A, the things that were ultimately given to Goldman and Morgan Stanley. There, those type discussions, so in that sense, you might say yes. There were discussions with the SEC regarding the short sale rules, so in that sense, government assistance, yes. But in terms of a real, you know, money, aside from the legal structure to obtain that money, I I don't remember anything one way or the other. Now, at the very, very, very end, there might have been, and by the end, I mean that weekend.
Right.
But I wasn't there. And, of course, so much of that weekend, I've read so many things, now I can't tell what I know and what I've read.
Right.
But I don't remember. I remember structural things. I don't remember just, you know, money.
What do you recall about Lehman? We've heard from other folks, and too, that Lehman was considering trying to become a bank holding company that, of course, is unusually followed by, give me some affiliate transaction 23A exemption so I can push assets into the insured depository institution to find an easier financing way. Do you recall the timing of when Lehman was considering doing that and why it never, I mean, as far as we know, Lehman never filed an application with the Fed to become a bank holding company?
Yeah, I do recall. Now, I could be off a bit on the timing, but I recall pretty clearly what was happening. We had asked our counsel, Sullivan and Cromwell and Raj Cohn in particular, to look at what it means to be a bank holding company, because it sounds good, but, you know, it's got ramifications. And so they did a lot of work on it. And we concluded that while there are some costs to it, because you have to get rid of certain things and what have you, there were real benefits to it. We also believe that 23A exemption would have been very, very important, and that required approval of both FDIC and the Fed. Sometime, now this is a guess, I think it was in June, we were on a call in Dick's office. Raj, I believe, was physically there, but he was certainly on the call, but I believe he was physically there. Dick was there. I was there. There might have been others there. We were on with the Fed, and Tim Geithner was on the call. He was doing the speaking now. There may have been other people on that call from the Fed, but I don't recall. And we were very clear to him that we thought that this would be a real possibility and something we might want to do. And the theory being that, you know, there's no sense in filing something if it's going to be either denied or sit there for 5 years. And, you know, you really want to, I don't want to say pre-clear, that's not the right word, but you want to give a heads up and get the views of someone. And Tim was pretty negative. And he was, in my view, so negative it wasn't worthwhile filing. With respect to the 23A, the second piece, we did pursue that very strongly. I was not a part of that, but I remember very clearly Raj Cohen with others went down to the FDIC, and the staff told them on no uncertain terms, no. And they were as clear as I just said it. So that ended.
In terms of the bank holding company, after Mr. Geithner made his pretty negative feelings known, was that the end of it for Lehman?
Yeah, in terms of that issue, because it just didn't seem like it was going anywhere. And you know, part of his reason is it may signal the wrong thing to the market. Mm-hmm. It was, I remember him saying that. I remember thinking, you know, one way to look at it, but that was I think part of his view, but he was negative. And you know, when you're working with the Fed, the last thing you want to do is have to do something which the head of the New York, you know, Fed says doesn't think it's a good idea. I mean, it didn't seem appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so tell me about your negotiations with the Korean Development Bank.
Well, there was some interest by the Korean Development Bank that was relayed to us, and through our head of Asian operations. And basically, I got sent over there with a group of people to see, to negotiate something. Weren't sure exactly what, but to negotiate something. And we started off very pleasant. I thought I was negotiating with the Korean Development Bank, which was the reason I was there. But when I got there, apparently, for whatever reason, they really weren't there. They might have had somebody sitting in to take notes, but the bank itself wasn't there. We were negotiating with a bunch of Korean institutions, but not them. There seemed to be a real interest in owning a percentage of Lehman. The first day, I actually thought, boy, this is great. They really want to do business, and we talked about the possibility of their ownership and working out mutual things. We said all the things that you might say in the first day of negotiation, which are very optimistic and what have you. And I really felt that this was going to happen. I just did. And the second day, I was less optimistic. And after about the third or fourth day, I wondered why I went there. It just was such a disappointment. It just didn't seem to have any. The Korean Development Bank wasn't even. Nobody was. It just seemed like I didn't understand. Something must have happened with that Korean group that made them decide that they really weren't that interested, because I was as flexible as could be to get a deal. So I went home, considering my trip a failure, and and not to this day understanding what the devil happened. And then there was a renewed interest by the Korean group. And after that, I lost touch, because at that point, I was not in the picture, and I had no further contact with the Korean delegation, except for one minor due diligence that they were doing on the legal department, which was an hour meeting just on the legal department and the litigation. So after that, I had no real knowledge.
Okay, and the timing of your initial trip to Korea, do you recall when that was?
I don't know. I have to ask Josh here. Do you remember? No, it had to be in May.
Yeah. So you think May, June time frame?
Yeah.
I mean, I actually think we have it somewhere. I just don't have it in front of me.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like it's more May.
Okay.
I don't remember. But it was, that's the period. We were just going to look in Too Big to Fail, the book.
Yeah, the Bible, right?
With all of this. Anyway, whatever. Okay. It's got a date, but it's a big waste of my time. Uh-huh.
So, you know, we've seen in documents, I think, and certainly in interviews, that you were involved in discussions with the folks at J.P. Morgan Chase in terms of their demands for additional collateral for providing intraday funding. Does that jog any memory bells? Were you involved in that at all?
Yeah, I know. I remember my involvement.
Can you take us through that?
Okay. I had gotten a call. Now this is a little foggier, but then I'll get to what I remember clearly. I believe Dick had a call with Black about the clearing agreement, and Dick said call Tom. I had gotten a call, I don't think from Steve Black, though I could have, but I don't remember talking to him. But I got a call from, and I just remember, this is terrible to say, but a female. I don't remember her name. And she said that she was told to talk to me about the clearing agreement with J.P. Morgan. As a matter of practice, I would never get involved in something that I knew nothing about, which gives me a pretty clear slate in life. But I was worried about getting blindsided because, you know, I just wasn't going to agree to anything. I didn't know the technicality. I didn't know what the old clearing agreement was. I didn't know what the context was. And essentially, it's a finance issue anyway. Legal is more of a documentation of the financial deal. So I asked one of the attorneys in the legal department who was the right person. And I got told that the right person was whomever it was at the time. It was a fellow I didn't know, but he was apparently the expert on it within the legal department. I basically gave it to him. I said, "Can you do me a favor? Can you deal with J.P. Morgan, and can you deal with the right people?" And apparently he was the lawyer for some of the people who were the right people in the finance department, and deal with it at that point. I had no feeling that this was as major an issue as it's turned out to be, and subject to all sorts of litigation. It just seemed to be something that should be dealt with the right people at the firm. So that was what I had done, and then basically it got resolved. I got told that everything is that it was resolved, so I don't have to do anything more about it. And it was only subsequently, of course, that I found out that there was a lot to it.
Well, so when you're Mr. Full, you know, first tells you to tells Black to call Russo, and you get a call from a female at J.P. Morgan Chase. Are we talking September, or are we talking before then?
It's either the end of August, beginning of September. It was somewhere in there.
Okay, at the end of August, there were some new agreements executed. Does that help place it? Did it involve that?
Yeah, it could have been the end of August. I mean, it was somewhere in that time framework. I don't remember. But that's the right time framework. But I don't remember the end of August, beginning of September. It was in that, you know, a couple of week period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about, you know, in the week, actually before the week before the Lehman bankruptcy, so the week preceding the conservatorship of Fannie and Freddie. There was apparently a meeting on September 4th between senior management at Lehman and senior officers at J.P. Morgan Chase, where Lehman was sharing with J.P. Morgan what the third quarter results were going to be. Were you involved in that meeting? Do you recall?
I was not.
Okay. Now moving on to the week after Labor Day. Let me find it in my notes here. Bear with me. I guess we've heard that on the on either the 9th or 10th, or strike that. Yeah, on the 8th or 9th, it looks like J.P. Morgan said we need another $5 billion in collateral, and then Lehman posted about 3.6 on the 9th, 10th, and 11th, reportedly all under protest. Were you involved in any of the negotiations about that $5 billion request and then the 3.6 that was posted?
No, not at all.
Okay. Now, we've also heard from folks that $3 billion of that 3.6 that was posted, J.P. Morgan took issue with when they discovered it was a credit that was actually backed by a guarantee from Lehman. Do you recall anything about that?
I wasn't involved at all.
Okay. And then on September 11th, the Thursday, J.P. Morgan demands another $5 billion and says they need it, you know, before the markets open on Friday the 12th. Were you involved in that at all?
Yeah, I'm just trying to get straight. That was the Thursday before the bankruptcy.
Correct.
That weekend.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't involved at all. I'm just trying to get the dates straight. No, wasn't.
Okay. So when what we've heard about is a phone call that both Mr. Diamond, Mr. Black, and I think Mr. Zubrow, who was a chief risk officer, and that Mr. Fold, Mr. McDade, and Mr. Lowett, and we thought maybe you were involved in that call. That doesn't jog memory bells?
No, it doesn't.
Okay. Understanding you don't recall the phone call, were you involved or have any discussions with anybody within Lehman about that $5 billion demand?
No, I remember, you know, during that period, whether or not I was on that phone call, I remember the scuttlebutt. I mean, what people were saying, that they were just basically just taking very, I don't say selfish, but very unfriendly positions, which people just didn't think that was the proper way to behave. There was an awful lot of resentment for how we were being treated, and it was they were not. One person made a comment that they're requiring so much collateral now for things they required no collateral for before. They're sort of fair weather friends, not the way clients should be treated. But that's what I do. I do remember.
And you recall who you were talking to within Lehman about that?
No, I think it was a general feeling of anyone who, you know, who heard about this, that it just seemed inappropriate.
Okay. Now, I think you mentioned earlier that when we get to the weekend, where there are a bunch of Lehman people, or at least several Lehman people, spending the weekend at the New York Fed. I thought I heard you say earlier you were not down there. Is that correct?
I was not down there.
Okay. So, what are you doing during the Lehman weekend?
Well, I spent the weekend at work, basically. You know, I don't remember exactly what I was doing, but I seem to remember I was very busy. I had a number of calls with Bart, but mainly when Bart would call in to Dick, I would go into Dick's office, get updated directly from Bart. I mean, I'm trying to think whatever else. I don't recall speaking directly to Bart except when I was present when Dick was speaking with him. Mm-hmm. That's. I'm trying to think what else. I must have had, but I don't remember, conversations with Walt Gottschall. But I don't specifically recall it, but probably did. And I don't know what else.
Those calls would have been like with Mr. Miller and Ms. Fife, I take it?
Yeah.
Okay. And I take it they would have been about the potential of filing a bankruptcy petition.
Yeah, and I guess I have to include the weekend, Sunday. And of course, on Sunday was a very busy day, particularly in the late afternoon and through the night.
So, in terms of Saturday and Sunday, since you're on in Mr. Fold's office, as Mr. McDade's calling to provide updates, are there a lot of those? Are there just a couple, or is you know, calls coming in every 30 minutes, every 60 minutes? How's it working?
Well, again, that has a real answer to it, but my recollection is that Bart would call in every, couple of hours, every 3 hours, whatever, when there was something to say. Dick was extraordinarily anxious, and Bart would just do a download on whatever was happening at the Fed, so sort of reporting in. And there were, of course, a lot of discussions about Barclays and Bank of America.
Mm-hmm. And so, obviously, what were the reasons that you recall hearing from Mr. McDade or otherwise about why the Barclays or B of A deal didn't occur?
Well, in terms of the B of A deal, my recollection is that Dick could not understand why the CEO of Bank of America was kind of not returning his calls. He thought it was a very natural partnership, a very natural purchase by Bank of America, and he was just he didn't understand that at all, and he tried many times to get a hold of them, and I don't remember what Bart specifically had said. And I do know when the Merrill Lynch deal happened, we were totally, now we understood, but we were totally surprised, very surprised. In terms of Barclays, I think the feeling was, based upon the telephone calls I overheard, because I was not involved in negotiations with them at all, that would happen. I thought that, and as I recall, on Sunday, Bart actually told Dick, and I don't remember if I was part of that call or not, but Dick clearly told me, we have a deal with Barclays. It looked like it would, so we're fine. And so at some point on Sunday, I think we all felt that we were fine. And then a couple of hours later, and that was the difficult thing, because you're very nervous, and then all of a sudden you're fine, so you're on a high, and then all of a sudden you find out 2 hours later that it's not going to happen.
And what was your understanding of why it wasn't happening?
Well, we were told the FSA issue, it didn't seem to make sense to us, but we were told that.
And when you say the FSA issue, what do you mean?
That the FSA wouldn't approve Barclays having a waiver in terms of the need to have shareholder approval, and as a result, they couldn't do the deal. And that was it.
Did you hear any other reasons why the deal may not have gone down?
Well, I've heard, but this is really now probably second or third hand, that the U.S. government would do nothing to help.
Do you recall having any discussions with Mr. Cohn at the time about reasons for Barclays not doing the deal?
Yes. I think the discussions were really with Dick and Raj, and I was there. I Rise was said it didn't make sense to him. Rise was thought he should try to do the best he could to deal directly with the FSA, which I assume he did, but obviously to no avail. And he was, I think, as surprised as ever we all were.
Did you ever hear from Mr. Cohen or anyone else that the UK regulators simply didn't want the exposure that would come with a Lehman acquisition?
You know, I've heard that, but I can't say that that was from Raj, and that's the problem when you know, you hear something so many times through books and everything else. I certainly heard that, but I can't tell from where the source is now.
Right, right. So when the Barclays deal didn't occur, we've heard through other interviews and maybe seen in documents, I'm hazy myself, that there was then a, you know, folks came back to Lehman trying to figure out what to do, and that there's a conference call with the New York Fed in your office with a bunch of people about trying to figure out what to do next. Did you recall that?
A conference call in my office. There was, I remember calls after with Bart after this. I don't remember the call with the Fed in my office. Are you sure that's... I would have thought I'd remember that one.
Here's what we've heard, that, you know, once the folks, McDade and others that are down at the New York Fed, are told no Barclays deal, that everybody comes back to Lehman's offices in New York, you know, sitting around trying to figure out what to do. Of course, the board's there, too, because from what we've heard, they were expecting to have a board meeting at 1:30 in the afternoon to approve the Barclays deal. And so folks come back and say, well, there's not going to be a Barclays deal. And folks trying to figure out what to do next, because at least it sounds like from what we've heard from folks, it wasn't 100% yet that, you know, Lehman was going to file bankruptcy. They were still trying to look to see if there were any possible alternatives. And then what we hear is that, you know, there is a phone call in your office that perhaps may have been triggered by folks finding out that the PDCF program might be expanded and might be a way for Lehman to not have to file. Does any of that jog any memory bells?
No, it really doesn't. I do remember a phone call with the Fed, but that was Saturday, I'm pretty certain. But I don't remember, I just don't remember. It's conceivable, but it is odd that I would not remember it, but I just don't remember it. It happened, but...
So tell me this. I mean, understanding you don't recall a specific phone call with the Fed, what do you recall about Sunday at Lehman after you folks learned that the Barclays deal isn't going to happen? What are the discussions going on about what to do next?
The discussions were about, are there any other alternatives? Anyone else that would be interested, there had to have been discussions, but I don't certainly remember it, about what our ability would be to open on Monday, and Ian would have been the one controlling that discussion with Bart, and I don't remember, but specifically, but Dick might have tried to get a hold of Paulson, and if he did, I wasn't there for it. But I think my recollection was he was trying to find Paulson.
Okay. Do you recall any discussions about trying to get some government assistance to either, stay open indefinitely or to at least have some kind of orderly wind down of the company as opposed to just a filing?
Yes, I believe there were discussions about our access to the window and needing to have liquidity to open up on Monday. I think it, at that time, if we're talking about 1 o'clock on Sunday, I still think no one believed that anyone would ever just let it go. Certainly never let it go in bankruptcy just like that without a wind down. And it might have been that people were thinking that the government would do something. But after that, it's just, the people who were at the heart of it are much better, and I trust you're talking with them to go through what was discussed because they were the ones who were doing the negotiations with the Fed.
Were you in the board meeting when, we've heard that there was a board meeting and that during that board meeting, Mr. Cox and Mr. Baxter addressed the board by phone. Were you present at that board meeting?
I certainly was.
So take us through that, if you would, please.
We had been waiting for Bart to get back from the Fed. It seemed like an eternity. Bart basically downloaded to the board, and I guess Ian too, but mainly Bart, about the fact that he was, now this can be too strong of a word, but I think this is the sense I got out of it, told to file bankruptcy by Paulson, and that we had no choice. And but Bart could tell you exactly what was said. I'm just going by my recollection of the feeling of the thing. I got that feeling. And then there was a lot of discussion about it. Do we have options? Not options. Board members asked Ian and Bart all those questions. My recollection is Dick was in a state of shock. There was a call that came from Chris Cox, and Tom Baxter was on the phone. I think there were a lot of others probably on it. And Chris said that I'm calling to tell you that you should do something, but whatever you do, do something. And do it before the opening in the Far East. But get something done. Don't just not do something. He was asked directly by one of the board members, I don't remember who, but someone at one asked, are you telling us to file for bankruptcy? And Fritz said, no. I'm just telling you to do something and make sure it's clear that whatever you're doing, the public knows about. Of course, this was slightly different than what we were told by Bart. He was told, but it is what it is. And but I think the impression was that we were told to just file. I mean, that was my impression. You could ask others what theirs was. We spent a fair bit of time talking about that. Are there really any options, given the fact, given the circumstance that I just described? And apparently the Fed was not going to be particularly helpful to us in terms of liquidity. Didn't seem like It seemed like Lehman was left on its own. And then a considerable amount of time was spent with Weil Gotshal explaining to the board about the filing and what it might mean, and in terms of the mechanics and everything that would have to be done. And again, everyone might have a, you know, their own view, but after listening to it all, knowing that the Fed wasn't going to be there, knowing that you know, you get effectively told to file, there wasn't much of a choice, and so the board voted to do it.
Do you recall, did you have any discussions with anyone at the New York Fed or anyone within the government, about, you know, after you learned the Barclays deal was off, about trying to get any kind of assistance from the government?
I don't remember. I, you know, might well have. The conversations that I did recall, which I thought was Saturday, but, you know, I can't swear to it. It was, could have been Sunday. But I think it was Saturday, was to the effect that no matter what, you can't let it fail, because the ramifications are enormous. It would make no sense. And I think they probably got that argument from Bart and from me and other people, too. But I did try to make it clear that the ramifications of a bankruptcy is not just about a company. It's about a system. We're enormous. And it, so I, you know, I remember that call, because I had convinced myself that no rational person would do it.
Who was that call with?
It was a, there was a speakerphone at the Fed. It had a lot of Fed people and, for all I know, Treasury people. I don't remember who was there, but it would have been, it probably would have been a lot of the people in the legal department. But I'm speculating, but I would have probably placed it to Baxter, but I don't know. I don't remember if he was on the call or it was just the people in the department.
Do you recall who else was on the call from your side?
Yes, Eric Felder, and what's the guy's Lyons? Tim Lyons.
Any
chance? Tim Lyons recalls more of the call than I do.
Okay. So, you know. Any chance this call could have been Sunday after you found out the Barclays deal had fallen through?
It's conceivable. It's conceivable. In my mind, I have it on a Saturday, and I don't know why I have it on a Saturday. And it's one of those mind tricks that, you know, once you get it in your head, you sort of stick with it, but it could have been on a Sunday.
I'll tell you, you're not the only person that has told us, and I'm sure this won't be surprising, that we're telling the government at the time, you know, you can't let this fail. It's not just about a company. It's about a system. That it's not a rational thing to do, that there's going to be, you know, a fair amount of fallout, and that's an understatement, you know, from a $600-700 billion company with many, many counterparty relationships filing bankruptcy. What response were you getting from the government to these arguments?
I must tell you, it's even hard to have this conversation now. It's just a difficult thing. I mean, to this day, I don't understand it. So, I don't remember what they're, you know, I'm sure they listen, you know, but you're in a situation there, you know, you have somebody, a lawyer, talking their book, so I'm sure it was discounted, you know, I guess, I don't know. I just don't know. Because you're advocating a position that you have a self-interest in, so they probably, you know, take it with a grain of salt. You know. So. I'm sure Bart had a number of conversations face to face with people who are higher up than lawyers.
Mr. Russo, I know you said this, but I would be asked a question specifically. Do you know if Lehman Brothers applied for assistance through the primary dealer's credit facility during that last week, or specifically on the Friday after you had the Martin call?
I don't recall. I think there was a feeling that, I'll tell you the feeling, but then the answer is I don't recall. The feeling was to apply to that would be so last resort kind of a thing that let's avoid it at all costs because it seems to, you know, that make a statement about that you didn't want to make. But saying that, I don't know the answer to your question.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Russo, just a few more questions. In the summer of 2008, when you met with the New York Fed, did they ever convey a plan to step into the shoes of J.P. Morgan and provide intraday funding?
I have no knowledge of it one way or the other.
Okay. And when you were talking to the Korean Development Bank, was J.P. Morgan involved at all, or?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. And do you
if they were, I have zero recollection of it.
Okay. And the week prior to bankruptcy, do you recall when the first time you contacted Weil Gotshal?
Yeah, I didn't contact Weil Gotshal. The person who was running the legal department contacted them. I'd be guessing when that is, but I think I learned about it probably on that Thursday before that infamous weekend. It could have been Friday, but probably Thursday. And, the fact that I should learn about it after the fact, that was interesting. And I spoke to Weil Gotshal. I was concerned that they keep it silent, because just like that we were talking about going to the window, or the effect of going to the window, a rumor of that could really be the kiss of death. And so that was the only conversation I remember. But I didn't give them the go-ahead to do anything, because frankly, at the time, I didn't think it was possible.
And I take it that was Steve Bergenfeld who contacted Weil Gotshal?
Absolutely.
And what was your conversation with Mr. Bergenfeld?
Well, I was a little surprised. Something like this, I would have thought at least he would have talked to me. But then again, he ran the department, so what am I supposed to do? And I did say, yeah, I think Steve was probably on the call with me with Weil on the keeping it confidential. You know, it's like a merger acquisition. You want to keep all this stuff, anything that could be this kind of dynamite information, confidential.
And looking back, do you have a view as to why AIG was saved as opposed to Lehman, and Lehman was allowed to fail?
Let me ask you that question. Let me ask you that question, because I don't know.
All right, I guess my very last question is, what's your view as to why Lehman failed?
I think, whether it be Fannie or Freddie, which were really leveraged, whether it be Goldman at the other end, Morgan Stanley, Merrill Lynch, Bear Stearns, I think they all had issues, serious issues. And part of that was an illiquidity due to this correlation that went to one of certain assets that nobody wanted to have. And everyone was in some way similarly situated. And Lehman was there at the wrong place, wrong time. Had AIG been before Lehman and vice versa, you would have something different. you had this right after the Fannie and Freddie. There's a lot of talk of moral hazard. I think that without government assistance, everyone else would have failed. And so I don't see Lehman as is materially different than any other company. I just think in the queue, it was the wrong time, wrong place. And the liquidity issue would have toppled Merrill for sure, and probably everyone else, and certainly AIG. So I think it was more a systemic thing due to a general leverage in the society as a whole, in the banking system in particular. And I think that the way in which it was dealt with was is what you're looking at now, and I look forward to what you have to say. But your penultimate question was a good one. I wondered about that a lot.
So, Mr. Russo, the Lehman weekend, do you recall hearing anything from anybody at the Fed or within Lehman about whether or not AIG was also being discussed at the New York Fed that weekend?
No. I you know, if I did hear anything about it, I don't recall it at all. At all. I just know.
Mr. Russo, thank you very much for your time. We very much appreciate it. I'll tell you what I tell everybody. We'll, caucus amongst ourselves, look at our notes, and if we realize we forgot to ask you something, we'll contact your lawyer. But I don't think that'll be necessary. So thank you very much for your time today.
I just want to tell all of you, I think the work you're doing is so important, and you're all to be congratulated.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.